The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
A week to go until Christmas, but just 2 days before something that's becoming more important to me lately. It's the winter solstice, which happens this Tuesday. In addition to being the shortest day of the year, this year, the winter solstice is going to be a full moon on the solstice, and there's going to be a full lunar eclipse that night, too. Last time that happened, I checked, was in 1556. I don't know. It just got my attention. Okay, we have a big and important show tonight, and our guest, Nicole Foss, a.k.a. Stoneley of Automatic Earth, is so popular that we already had a whole bunch of questions sent in by her fans, and I've got all those stacked up right now, who not surprisingly follow us both very closely, and I consider that to be a compliment, and I hope she does too. If you have questions for Nicole or me tonight, you can call in at 1-888-874-4888. That's our toll-free line, or you can email me directly. At lifeboathour at collapsenet.com. That's lifeboathour at collapsenet.com. That'll come up right in front of me. But first, let's do an update on this really important and it's now getting pretty exciting race that we're having to help transition U.S. reach a $100,000 challenge grant deadline for December 31st. There's just 12 days to go. We dedicated last week's entire show towards helping transition U.S. raise $100,000 by December 31st. That's the deadline, because if they do, it'll be matched by another $100,000. Right now, I believe there are about 86.5, and I think that's about 10,000 in the last week. But tonight, I think Ronnie Krausman from Transition U.S. is with us. He was our guest on last week's show, and maybe he can tell us what's going on. Hi, Ronnie.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Great.
Good. Well, I've been checking the totals daily on our site, and I was just away actually for 3 days, and I checked today. When we were on your show last Sunday, we were at 81.5. We're now at $89,000. So
wow.
I was just blown away. Of the $3,000 that we've raised in about the last 3 or 4 days, half of it came from fans of the Lifeboat Hour, including a $1,000 contribution.
Oh, that's terrific.
So far it's been more than $2,000 raised by fans of the Lifeboat Hour, and I'm hoping we can be at $90,000 tomorrow, so we'll have 11 days to go, $10,000 to raise. We had a donor who said she'd actually make the match 4-1 instead of 2-1. She's just kicked in another $1,000 for us to do that, so any donation that's made tonight or tomorrow will be matched 4-1 if we hit this grant. And if we do that, it means that we'll be able to do a lot more to support the 77 transition initiatives nationwide and, you know, small towns like Hope, Idaho, to big metropolises like L.A. So we can transition to the post-carbon future and also to put a lot of money into supporting new ones. So folks go to transitionus.org/donate. We'd be so grateful. This is kind of first and 10 here. And we got 11 days to do it. We started on our own 10-yard line. We're now just 10 yards out from making this happen. So
sounds like we're going to be at 99,000 on December 30th. I mean, this is a nail biter and a half.
Listen, it's amazing. It's really $1,000 a day that we're raising, and it's just it couldn't be any closer. You know,
this is so important because Transition US is doing amazing work. They're now in 77. They're less than 2 years old.
That's right. Yep.
And they've already got 77 initiatives going around the country, teaching people how to relocalize in food production, how to form community, how to prepare to live in a post-industrial lifetime, or to, as the original expression said, make a transition to a post-petroleum way of life, or can't be petroleum-free yet. But anyway, they're doing the deed, and this is really important. There's a bonus for listeners tonight. CollapseNet, as a way of giving you incentive, if you give $100 to help Transition U.S. meet this really important finish line, we will give you, CollapseNet will give you a one-year membership for free. All you got to do is put Lifeboat Hour in the dedication box frame field of the donation page at transitionus.org. And if you give $1,000, we will give you a free lifetime membership plus access to all upgrades we're planning at CollapseNet. Those are tax deductible, so write the checks, put Lifeboat Hour in, and you're just getting the deal of the century there. So anyway, Ronnie, good luck. We got a great guest tonight. We got to move on. Thank you for joining us, and I'll be plugging you again before the show's over.
Thanks so much, Mike. Take care.
Thank you. Bye. Okay, glad I got that done. It is kind of exciting to see the progress they're making there. So now let's talk about our guest here. Nicole Foss writes under the name, the nom de plume of Stoneley, over at the Automatic Earth. That's automaticearth.blogspot.com. It's a hugely popular site, which she also co-edits with her writing partner. The site integrates finance, energy, environment, psychology, population, and real politic in order to explain why we find ourselves in the state of in this state of crisis. Nicole's background is as interesting, and it's really as multifaceted as her site. She has a BS in biology, was a research fellow at the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies, Oxford, yes, was editor of the Oil Drum Canada, and over her extensive career has specialized in everything from pollution control to nuclear safety, and did I mention she has a Master's of Law degree from somewhere? Anyway, she has a very, very large and loyal following, and she's right up there among the top tier of economic writers that I respect, which include both Chris Martinson and Peter Schiff. We're going to talk about some differences along those lines tonight. While some have liked to focus on different verbiage between the four of us, the fact is that we all pretty much see the same immediate, emphasis on the word immediate, crisis for the U.S. and global economies as a whole, which are certain to change the world we live in more drastically than we can probably imagine, and in a very short period of time. These are two critical points I think we all agree on. Chris Martinson will be a guest on the show on January 9th, and I have requests into both Schiff and Congressman Ron Paul, and we expect to hear back from both. Ron Paul was in my video, Truth and Lies of 9/11. We've followed each other for years. Our guest next week will be the legendary trapper and survival instructor, Tom Brown, who I just spent a couple of days with up in Northern California. Wow, that was an experience. And guess what? I'm taking off January 2nd, so we'll be dark that night, I guess. I need a few days off, too. I want to do something different tonight. Now, I have such respect for Nicole's insights. I'm going to bring her on right at the start of the show when I normally do news so that we can discuss some key developments over the past week. First, let me find out if she's there. Nicole, are you out there?
I am indeed.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show tonight.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Have you seen the World News Desk at CollapseNet?
I have seen a number of stories that I believe you are going to be discussing tonight.
Yes, yeah, and we post every day there, and it's the member testimonials speak for themselves. Now, I'm going to hit you with a surprise, but it's the same surprise I got hit with. Just before we went on the air, I got these two stories from Tomorrow's Telegraph about how Europe is trying to deal with their crisis. I'm going to read the two headlines, and if you're game, I'd like to ask you to give me your take on them, okay?
Okay.
All right, this is from Tomorrow's Telegraph in England. First, story says, Cameron, Merkel, and Sarkozy promise to freeze EU spending as the Eurocrats expand their realm. First paragraph says, David Cameron, Angela Merkel, and Nicolas Sarkozy have pledged to freeze European Union spending for the next 9 years as anger grows among national governments over the soaring costs without discernible results of Brussels empire building. Okay, that's story number one. Now here's story number two, also from Tomorrow's Telegraph, but it's by Ambrose Evans Pritchard. I'm sure that's a name you know
well.
Well,
that's a name I know, yes.
Yes, we both know that name. And, you know, he's good at what he does. But here's the headline for his story. Self-righteous Germany must accept a Euro debt union or leave EMU. First paragraph. If Germany and its hard money allies genuinely wish to save the euro, which is open to doubt, they should stop posturing, face up to the grim imperative of a transfer union, and desist immediately from imposing their ruinous and reactionary policies of debt deflation on Southern Europe and Ireland. Okay, how do you reconcile those headlines?
Well, essentially, I must say I rather agree with Ambrose Evans Pritchard on that one. I've written myself on wrote an article called The Imperial Eurozone with All That Implies, mm-hmm. and essentially I was pointing out that either you have a union or you do not. If you have a union, then the only way to really keep that union together would be to say, we're in this together and we will share the losses.
Right.
I don't think the odds of keeping Europe together, no matter what they do, are particularly high, but I think that would really be the only realistic way. If Germany wants to keep all the losses in the periphery, then I think the austerity measures that will have to be imposed will be so swingeing that imposing them will be political suicide for domestic politicians, and I think the peripheral countries will choose to leave.
Okay, question, but Angela Merkel's also made what I've seen a number of times, a pretty strong stand saying that senior bondholders need to get a serious haircut, which also seems to be a sticking point, and that's something I picked up on.
Yes, I mean, there are conflicting positions. I don't think Angela Merkel, I think she believes in the euro, absolutely. I think she does. And she wants to keep the project together. But I think she's walking a tightrope in terms of what would be acceptable domestically and what is required to keep the eurozone together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that tightrope walking act actually can be performed by anybody.
Exactly.
Now, I don't think the future of the eurozone is looking particularly bright at this point at all.
We're in complete agreement on that. Now, here's some other headlines. I sent you these. Spain's banks about to get crushed by a real estate mess.
Oh, not just Spain's banks either.
I mean, that's right.
Most of the banks in Europe, one way or another. I mean, even German banks, although there's no housing bubble in Germany per se, their banks are terribly exposed to the housing bubbles of the periphery. And there is so much pain still to come in the real estate area. There are housing bubbles all around the periphery, massive housing bubbles that are far larger than the U.S., for instance.
One up in Canada, from what I understand.
Oh, yes. There's an enormous real estate bubble here, especially in places like Vancouver. But the European housing bubbles, with the exception of Vancouver, the European housing bubbles are worse, I would say, than anything you see in North America.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's another story. Let's see what we got here. Derivatives rules, I love this, increase risks in nascent market for swaps, China credit. I sent you that one. We have spoken about derivatives, and I can imagine us both. You have the first run at this. Go ahead.
This one rather amuses me because the assumption in that headline is that facilitating the development of a swaps market will reduce risk. Which was exactly the justification for doing it everywhere else, that we'll spread risk and then therefore risk will somehow magically disappear. And all that happened when we saw the enormous development of credit default swaps elsewhere was that risk, instead of disappearing, became systemic. So I would argue that what the Chinese government has often tried to do with high reserve requirements and fairly tight requirements on what you can do in derivatives has actually been reining in the potential for the development of the same financial weapons of mass destruction, as Warren Buffett called them, that the rest of the world has seen. But the person who wrote that article was obviously thinking that constraining the development of a derivatives market enhanced risk. I would completely disagree.
Absolutely.
The development of a derivatives market actually causes risk to become systemic. And if the Chinese government is trying to prevent that from happening, then I would argue that's absolutely the right thing to do.
Well, I've been kind of watching because we see a pattern here that's been evolving as Europe has proceeded through its stages of disease, if you will, which is that you see credit default swaps appearing on governments, and then you see the spreads widening enormously, which is a sign, you know, of the increased risk. And it's almost now a kiss of death to see credit default swaps on sovereigns, and they've just started appearing for China. And that I find very interesting because China is also walking on a knife edge.
Absolutely. They have an enormous amount of bad debt in their system. Yeah, they are in an enormous bubble as well. They've tremendously overbuilt a lot of productive capacity and a lot of real estate in the particularly bubbly markets. And so that's going to be an albatross hanging around their necks, the same as it will be in many other parts of the world.
On last week's show, I have a story that showed that the Chinese are selling 42,000 cars a day. A day. And yet they're having traffic jams so large that it takes months to untangle them, and they have no room to put the cars, but they have to sell them. That's the knife edge thing, too. Okay, what next story? Were you through on the last one? Yes. Nicole, okay. Nick Lenoir, why the euro is about to crash and burn and why his concern for the new normal is not slow growth, but civil war. And this is from Zero Hedge, who you will find very frequently. I think Nicole probably holds them in pretty high regard, too. But what's your take on that?
I'm not sure I would go as far as civil war, but I do think we're looking at certainly the breakup of the Eurozone, or the Eurozone getting drastically smaller anyway. And it's entirely possible you could see the breakup of the EU as well. I mean, what you have is an enormous number of old hatreds and tensions that are cultural and ethnic and linguistic and religious and every kind of tension you can imagine in a continent that has developed small peer polities over 1,000 years.
Right.
Those tensions go back a long way, and each individual nation would really like to see its boundaries at whatever they were when it was the hegemonic power of its day. So there's a lot of overlap in areas where different ethnic influences apply. And during periods of expansion, you get a sort of papering over the cracks. There's enough to go around, so there's no real need to fight about things.
Right.
But as soon as things start to contract again, people remember why they didn't like each other very much not so long ago. And we saw that in Yugoslavia very clearly.
But it's also in Belgium, too.
I think in Belgium it's coming. I would certainly hope that any Belgian divorce would be rather like the divorce of Czechoslovakia. In other words, it would be fairly, you know, peaceful and normal.
Right.
It's hard to say, though. I don't think there's the kind of tension in Belgium that would actually cause people to fight with each other physically.
No, but the tension is rising, and this is what I notice, is that we've had the attack on Charles and Camilla. We've had we have an open revolt in Greece. Armored vehicles were in flames in Rome about a week ago. And, of course, we had the huge demonstrations in France, which are just warm-ups for what the French can do. And what I'm sensing, and of course, now we have this, the horrible calamity striking Britain on every front right now. And I remember the revolution. I don't remember, but the revolution of 1848 was a pan-European revolution. And I'm kind of suspecting that we might see civil unrest on a pan-European basis where it erupts in several countries all at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's coming no matter what. Because there have been so many promises made to people that absolutely cannot be kept. The way that Europe has developed has a lot more state intervention. There's a lot more of, you know, there are welfare programs and things that people have tended to look to. Things like quite early retirement ages and reasonably generous benefits and a safety net that really hasn't existed certainly in the States.
Well,
and I think people look to that, and those are going to turn out to be promises that cannot be kept.
People are watching the safety net getting cut all around them, so they kind of get it. Okay,
and,
we got to move.
And they rely on these promises.
Yes.
And when they find out that these promises genuinely cannot be kept, no matter how much they demonstrate, they're going to get extremely angry.
And that's going to happen here, too.
Very much so.
Yeah, yeah. And we can come back to that. We've got to move on to a couple things before we get down to the bottom of the hour. The stories we just went over are stories that you'll find on the World News Desk at CollapseNet. And the important work we do there is to make sense of all of what's going on everywhere for you by looking at all the crisis issues of our time, economic collapse, sustainability, peak oil, geopolitical and military events, resource depletion, environmental collapse, and what is obviously unfolding as the end of the world as we know it. Nicole does the same thing, and you need both of us. And this is why I'm going to such lengths to support Transition US, Nicole, and to bring Chris Martinson on this show, is because there are some clear voices all pretty much saying the same thing at the same time. And CollapseNet has its own unique stuff. And I'd love to have a forum where, like, Chris, Nicole, and I could just, you know, sit and talk about this stuff live on TV and let people sort through, because it's good dialogue. Anyway. We deal with it, we research it, we analyze it at CollapseNet, we illuminate it, and we hook people up in some really cool ways to help them and you. Perhaps most importantly, we clearly see and acknowledge what's happening in the world around us, and we help you to see it so that you can prepare for it. People are being eaten alive all over the country now, whether it's by mortgage gate or the loss of their pension funds or by cutbacks in fiscal service, local services such as police and fire. We provide a free Lighthouse directory of information now with more than 830 very uniquely useful goods, services, and training, including Nicole's wonderful site, Automatic Earth, focused specifically on how to survive the collapse of human industrial civilization and make a transition to a relocalized and sustainable way of life. We hook you up with others who are preparing, and we tell you precisely and accurately every day what's going on, what to look for in the World News Desk. Testimonials from our members. You can go read them for yourself. They bring tears to my eyes. Thank you. That's the value of what we provide every day on the World News Desk, and that saves time, money, and effort for everyone trying who needs to know what's going on. We do that at CollapseNet by relentlessly scanning media outlets and identifying stories that really matter and bringing them to you every day, 7 days a week. So anyway, and until December 31st, for the next 19 days, we have a year-end holiday special of 2-for-1 for each membership purchased. Buy one, get one free. It's now open to all means of payment. It's probably the best Christmas present you can give anyone right now. And most of all, you'll feel pretty good about it. CollapseNet's trying to tie all of this stuff together, and especially to help through this radio show and other ways to bring you people like Nicole and let you hear what she has to say. You can find us at CollapseNet, www.collapsenet.com. Okay, whew. Got all that done. Now, we're coming down to the bottom of the hour. We do this once every show, Nicole. You know I'm in a band, right?
Mm-hmm.
A band called New White Trash. We play one song every show. We're going to do that right now. The song we're going to play tonight is 37 original songs released in our double CD, double wide. You can find us at newwhitetrash.com. This is a song written and performed by my bandmate Doug Lewis, who is just an amazing guy. The lion's share of work in New White Trash belongs to him, and it's as close to a Christmas song as I could think of. The title of the song is Trailer Light. Now, it's kind of funny because when I listen to the song, and I'm sure everybody's done this, you've heard songs that you all knew and you kind of made up words of your own. That happens to me, too. I'm a songwriter, but I hadn't heard this song. Doug had written it before I joined the band, and I thought it said, leave the tree and the light on. But then I created this scenario about people who are not living as well as they used to, who don't have the house that they used to. They're now in a trailer and maybe working 2 minimum wage jobs and on different shifts. And it's Christmas, and it's a poor Christmas, and maybe there's not a lot of presents, but they have each other. And this is a song that maybe will think about, make you think about what's really important to you. It's called Trailer Light.
Still free.
From the new white trash, that's our way of saying happy holidays to everybody out there, regardless of how your life is going right now. If it's going hard, get grateful for the things you got, especially if you got some people you can lean on. That's your Christmas, and that's probably the best thing out there. So you can find us at newwhitetrash.com. Our CD is called Double Wide, mixed and mastered by Bob Rice, whose last project was Roger Waters of Pink Floyd. No kidding. And you can download or buy CDs and all that good stuff there. But now we got a really good radio show. Now we've got about 5 minutes before station break. Nicole, I've got like 7 or 8 questions here lined up already from people who have emailed in.
Mm-hmm.
And this first one, I think, is really gets to the nub of a lot of things out here right now. So here it is. It says, I read on Automatic Earth religiously. While I don't dismiss her views on the economy, I don't either, I also read alternative and almost polar opposite views that to me seem equally compelling. You know the names, Schiff, Salente, Ron Paul, John Williams. Nicole says we can't have hyperinflation as long as the rest of the world is buying dollars. My question, are they buying dollars, or are those buyers proxy buyers for the Fed? Also, there's Taleb's black swan to consider. Things can change on a dime. Blessings. That's the question. Nicole.
Well, I think what we're looking at is because we're having a rally that's topping essentially now, mm-hmm. we're looking at problems that are about to reverse. So I think we are on a trajectory that if you extrapolated it forward would lead to the kind of things that people are talking about, hyperinflation and the Fed being the entire purchasing arm of the U.S. bond market. I think that is about to go into reverse. So I think this is the critical point, that what a lot of people are doing is extrapolating trends forward. We've had a long rally. It's been about 18 months. And if you extrapolated those trends forward, you would see markets go up. You would see more in the way of printing. You would see the Fed buying more and more bonds. But instead, what I think we're going to have is a reversal. I think that means stocks are going to fall. Commodities are going to fall. Gold, oil, agricultural commodities. I think the dollar is going to rise. So I think we're going to mm-hmm. see a reversal of a whole constellation of existing trends.
Okay, but how much of that is attributable? Because what I see is the dollar getting a bump as a result of Europe imploding. There will be so much uncertainty around the breakup of the EU that the dollar will gain, I think, momentary strength. But
well,
I still
I think
see
it
the
will
dollar
gain more than momentary strength. I do agree that really is at the basis of what's going to happen with the dollar. That I think there is going to be so much uncertainty in Europe, and then mm-hmm. so much capital flight as a result of sovereign debt risk contagion, that I think that's going to bump the dollar for a year or more. I think this is only the very, very beginning of the dollar going up significantly. And I think capital flight from Europe will also result in the U.S. having much less trouble selling its bonds in the future than it does now. I think the rates in the U.S. will be held down by what happens in Europe, because what happens in Europe, I think, is going to be massive, and it's certainly not going to be over soon.
Okay, I've been following this also from the standpoint. I have seen we've seen China sell two large tranches of treasury, 30 billion tranches in the past month or so. They've just linked their currency with the ruble in Russia. There are other moves indicating to me very strongly that people are slowly moving away from the dollar. Now, I'm in complete agreement pretty much with everybody. You can't have hyperinflation while the dollar is the world's reserve currency. That's, you know, that's a given. But I do see the dollar weakening as China and Russia begin to are more assertive.
This is true. I think what we're looking at, the thing that really says to me that we're looking at reversals are the sentiment indicators. And in the case of the dollar, almost everyone is a dollar bear these days. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the setup for mm-hmm. a trend reversal. When almost mm-hmm. everyone is on one side of the bet, take the other side of the bet. That's what the insiders do all the time. That's how markets are predatory mechanisms that milk the herd.
You're a
devious
one. That
constantly profit off what the herd is doing.
Yes.
You need to take the opposite side of the bet. When everyone is bearish, it's a reasonable assumption that the people who are bearish have acted on that bearishness, and therefore who is left to take the trend any further in that direction?
Okay.
And I think the same goes for stocks and commodities and various other things. Sentiment indicators there are exceptionally bullish, unbelievably bullish. And when you have, once something has become received wisdom to the extent that almost everyone believes it, it's almost always wrong.
All right. I think one of the things that our questioner here wanted to know was, and I'm going to do this. She mentioned four specific names, Peter Schiff, Gerald Celente, Ron Paul, and John Williams. And I think they want some evaluation. And I'll just tell you how I view each. Nicole, you may or may not. You might choose to be diplomatic. Peter Schiff is very articulate, and he gets essentially very clearly issues about debt and gold, and he has been. I remember him right after the 2008 meltdown. He was having a shouting match, one of many, and basically he said the whole thing is corrupt, tear it down, and he's been very clear like that. I have great respect for Peter Schiff. I may not agree. I'm still learning from all these people, as I do from Nicole. Celente and the inflation people are probably the lowest on my list. I just don't think they get peak oil. And for me, peak oil is a fundamental issue that must be seen and accepted to understand also what's at play here. Ron Paul, I met back in 01 when I filmed my video Truth and Lies of 9/11/02. And I followed him for a long time. I think he speaks with enormous clarity regarding the Federal Reserve and debt and money. And I'm not familiar with John Williams in the least. So, Nicole, Peter Schiff, what do you think?
Well, I think he's not looking at the scale of credit collapse. So I think what he's looking at is further down the line. It's not that I don't think we'll ever have inflation. Mm-hmm. It's that the way I see that is that if you're looking at the horizon where inflation might lie, what you're missing is the enormous pit with the sharpened stakes in the bottom that is right in front of your feet. Mm-hmm. And if you're busy looking at the horizon, you're going to fall in that pit, and that'll be it right then and there.
There you go.
So to me, deflation is the immediate threat. Inflation is a threat considerably further down the line.
All right.
But because deflation and depression are mutually reinforcing dynamics, I don't think that's going to be over soon. So I think the inflation threat lies further down the line than Peter Schiff does, or John Williams, for instance.
Okay, all right.
If you don't recognize the enormous role of credit and what the collapse of credit will do, then you would tend to be looking at inflation.
What would deflation look like to John Q. Citizen in the street? What would they see that would tell them, this is deflation?
Well, essentially, their access to credit would almost disappear. Unless they're incredibly wealthy, they would find, well, it might start slowly. It might start with the premiums on their credit cards going up, their credit balances being unilaterally cut, their access to other loans being cut, basically all kinds of credit limits coming down. Eventually, where we're going is no credit for ordinary people at all, and even for people who are much wealthier, credit only at very high risk premiums, only at very high interest rates.
I've just blasted directly through the station break at the bottom of the hour, which means that the feds are going to arrest us both, Nicole. So we have to do a station break. We'll be back in a second. Sorry.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
This is a state of emergency. No, it's not. It's more of a state of urgency. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your news dissector. I'm on the radio Fridays at 1 p.m. right here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, offering a different narrative to the news, challenging what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're reading, offering another way of understanding what's going on. Join me online on MediaChannel.org and join me here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com Fridays at 1 p.m. Be there or be square.
Every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join the founders of the Godspeed Institute for Spiritual Learning, Carol and Michael Hallenbeck, for Godspeed, an enlightening and informative journey into the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Through conversations with experts worldwide, this weekly live call-in program is an on-air classroom aimed at helping listeners gain exposure to and insight into religious and spiritual practices around the world, every Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Mitchell J. Rabin to tell you that we have two new time slots every Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Progressive Radio Network. Join me as I interview and dialogue with the sung and unsung heroes of society, with passion and with commitment. Scientists, healers, filmmakers, musicians, environmentalists, and gurus on Mondays, and a call-in show where you'll be the focus on Wednesdays. Again, Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m., join Mitchell Rabin as together we create a better world.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
There are just 19 days left until December 31st. That's the last possible day that Transition U.S. can make $100,000 to achieve and accept and receive a $100,000 challenge grant, meaning that $100,000 will double if they can raise that money. They're at 86.5 now. Transition U.S. is the best thing out there that I've seen in this country, helping people to relocalize, teaching them how it's done. 77 transition initiatives formed around the country in population centers of over, I think, 24, 26 million people. And they're being called on much more heavily as the economic and political and military, as every situation continues to deteriorate. So go to www.transitionus.org. And make a donation. You make a donation of $100 after listening to this show. Put in Lifeboat Hour in the dedication field, and we'll give you a one-year free membership to CollapseNet to boot. That's tax deductible, so help them out. Okay, now we're going back to what we were talking about, and one of the things about deflation, and I'm thinking about Japan here, Nicole, is that what you saw in Japan, too, was that prices of consumer goods were falling and people got into a habit of waiting for the prices to fall even lower. It became a self-reinforcing prophecy that nobody was spending any money.
Yes, I mean, you see a fall in the velocity of money. That's very, very true. But I think we're going to see prices fall, but purchasing power is going to be falling faster. I don't think it's going to look that much like Japan. Japan was very, very long and drawn out. I don't think we're going to be looking at that.
No.
I think we're going to be looking at something that's quite abrupt over a short number of years, where credit disappears, unemployment skyrockets vastly higher than anything we've seen so far.
Yes.
Tax revenues will not be sufficient to pay out the benefits, that even the benefits that are not adequate now, that will be even less adequate later. So I think people are going to have essentially no money. An enormous number of people will have virtually no money.
Now,
if prices fall, things are going to be still less affordable. That's the key message of deflation.
There's a key nugget in there in what you said, which is that the purchasing power of those dollars is going to be falling even faster. And most people would associate that with inflation.
That's not quite what I mean.
Okay.
Purchasing power, by purchasing power falling, I do not mean the purchasing power of dollars will fall. I actually think the purchasing power of dollars will go up drastically, but there'll be hardly any of them.
Ah.
It's purchasing power falls because 95% plus of the money supply is credit. And when that disappears, you crash the money supply. What's left is actually worth significantly more. The purchasing power of the dollar went up during the Depression. I expect it to go up again. But because so few people will have any dollars, their purchasing power will be drastically less than it is now.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you. I got that. What do you think about Ron Paul?
I think he's an honest man. I don't share his politics. And I tend to think that the call for hard money is really something that is quite elitist. Essentially, if you had gold-backed money, you would have a very, very hard ceiling on the money supply. And essentially, that would mean that ordinary people would really never get anything that in their hands that actually was money.
Well, it's hard to at $1,400 an ounce now.
Yeah. It's essentially, a gold-backed money supply is a very small money supply. Mm-hmm. It would not, by any stretch of the imagination, cover the amount of economic activity we currently see, which is why you had so much pressure to expand the money supply in so many ways. People were trying to expand economic activity, and they did, but that required an enormous expansion of the money supply, not just the money supply as measured by things like M3, but an enormous expansion of credit, especially in the shadow banking system.
Right.
So the money supply has just got completely out of control. That was the inflation. We had hyper credit expansion, which had the same effect as inflation. That, say, is now ending. And we're moving into the collapse of credit. And this is really the nub of the deflation argument, that when credit disappears, because credit is now the overwhelming majority of the money supply, you crash the money supply. And then you end up with basically no purchasing power in the hands of ordinary people.
Well, now,
so even as prices fall, everything gets less affordable.
Well, now, here we have gold. And I have always been a strong advocate of owning and possessing physical gold to preserve your wealth. I followed the work of Bill Murphy and GATA, Gold Antitrust Action Committee, for a number of years. And I see a move to gold as also reflecting, however, a complete loss of faith in fiat currency, especially if currency wars get out of control and no currency is in one place for more than a week.
I don't think we're that close to the death of fiat currency. It will come. There's no question. It's inevitable.
Right.
All fiat currencies die. I don't think we're there yet. And I think for the period of time when credit has disappeared, fiat currency, what little of it there actually is, which is not very much, will go up in purchasing power. I'm not necessarily an advocate of gold. I think it depends who you are. If you're extremely wealthy, you already have no debt, you already have cash, you already have control over the essentials of your own existence, by all means buy gold. You can afford to sit on it through the period of upheaval. If you're not so lucky, if you haven't done those other things first, those other things are more important, I would argue. If you hold gold and you are going to be forced to sell it in the next 5 years because you have too much debt, or you don't have cash, or you have no control over the essentials of your own existence, or all three. If you're going to be forced to sell gold in the next 5 years, you're not going to get what it's worth because too many people will be selling it at once. The price of gold, I think, is going to fall substantially. It will go up in the long term. It will hold its value in the long term. But that doesn't help you if you are forced to sell into the ultimate buyer's market.
And about 3 months ago, it collapsed, and I issued an urgent alert to all of our members saying that if you'd been holding gold on my advice, I mean, I've been recommending people buy gold since it was 300 an ounce. But I said you might want to sell up to half of it right now and get everything that you need to take care of yourself.
Exactly.
You know, that's the point. And I said that 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm. What you continue to hold is your insurance policy.
Right.
But it only helps you if you're not forced to sell it at the worst possible time.
That's right. That's right. You want to sell when it's high. That's why I said sell some and put yourself in a place where you could hold on to the rest for the long haul, because eventually it's going to break out. I have no doubt
about
that. Yes,
absolutely. But it's a balance. It's getting the whole picture
right.
And that absolutely involves getting out from under unpayable debts. Some people will pay them back. Other people will simply default on them, declare bankruptcy. They can only do that if they do it soon enough. because eventually that door on civilized ways of getting out from under debt will disappear.
Exactly.
But you get out from under debt, you hold some cash, because if you don't have credit and you're losing your job, which will happen to a lot of people, you'd better have some savings or you're not going to have anything to take to the store.
That's right.
And whatever control you can have over the essentials of your own existence will be worth its weight in gold. So it's a balance between the four.
Okay, I want to move on. We've got like six or seven more people sending questions. I don't want to get to the end of the show. We haven't got to them yet because these are good questions. Hi, Mike and Nicole. Been reading your work for several years now, including Rubicon and Collapse, and have been a member of CollapseNet since its inception. I only tripped over Nicole Foss's work recently, but I have been won over by her complete grasp of economics and peak oil, which I think is a unique combination. Yeah, so that's one thing that we do share in common, Nicole, is peak oil. My question is this, he asks. I failed economics at grammar school. Do they teach economics in grammar school? 40 years ago, so please forgive my limited understanding. From Nicole's talks, I understand that deflation is caused by an excess of claims against real assets and a subsequent decrease in real wealth. However, reading many blogs on the Internet, there is an underlying view that, quote, the powers that be are grabbing wealth from the common man. So which is it? Is it simply a shift of wealth from the poor and middle class to the wealthy elite, or is it really an evaporation of wealth, money disappearing down some economic black hole?
It's not that the wealth is evaporating. It's that the excess claims to underlying real wealth are evaporating. Credit expansions create excess claims to underlying real wealth.
Right.
And this is in contrast to classic currency inflation, where you take your real wealth pie and divide it into smaller and smaller pieces. Credit expansions create multiple and mutually exclusive claims to the same pieces of pie. And so you're all playing a game of musical chairs. When the music stops, there's about one chair for every 100 people.
Well, when you say excess claims on underlying real wealth, I'm going, wait a minute, that's derivatives.
It's leverage. It's basically yes. Leverage in all its forms. When you have an enormous amount of leverage, there's very little underlying real wealth, but you have enormous claims to it, vastly larger than the amount that you started with. You borrow the rest, and then the debts end up being an asset on someone else's balance sheet. They can say, I have an IOU, therefore I have this as an asset. I don't regard those debts as assets. I regard them as huge liabilities.
Yes.
They're not going to be paid. So what I would say is that what we have is a situation where there are massive excess claims to underlying real wealth. When the music stops, everyone's going to try and grab a chair. Mm-hmm. And what's happening
yes.
is you're getting a shift because the insiders are better placed than ordinary people to know that in a situation where you have excess claims to underlying real wealth, the best way to deal with that is to take your chair and quietly go sit on the sidelines before the music stops.
Yeah.
So you're having a shift because the insiders know that only a few people will ever be able to cash out. They're cashing out their claims now, which will mean that there's less wealth actually available for anyone who tries to cash out later. Very few cash out in a deflation.
I think in every public appearance I've made over the last 3-4 months, including a lot of travels, my primary message has been what you need to do is disengage by any means possible to get out of the way.
Exactly.
And that's a consistent message that you and I both have. And I want to stress that you and I spoke earlier this week, and we both see what's coming as being, number one, very close, and number two, very severe.
Very much so.
Yes,
and
agreed.
Absolutely. People should just get out of harm's way. Anyone who's playing the markets now, who is not watching them 24 hours a day and is not a complete insider, is running enormous risks. The risks are going up all the time. The upside is limited. I would just tell people, get out of the market. Get your cash. Sit on the sidelines. He who loses the least in a deflation is the winner. And the way to lose the least is to cash out and don't play the game, because you're playing a game that's rigged against you. Don't play the game.
That's why it's so important, and that's exactly right, Nicole. We're totally lockstep on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, let me make this concrete for somebody out there. Let's say you're like me. I have a 2008 Toyota RAV4. I put $15,000 down. I'm making payments, been making payments now for almost 3 years. Now, what in the scenario we're discussing, the dollars that I used to make those payments, and it's been real tough for us, but we're doing all right now because Wells Fargo finally released our money. That's a sidebar for those of you who follow CollapseNet. But if I don't have enough dollars, I can't make the payments. And if I can't make the payments because the dollars aren't moving and they're harder to come by, then my car could get repossessed and all of that wealth instantly transferred. That's the black hole that you get sucked into.
Yes, exactly. I mean, a banking system basically creates enormous amounts of leverage, and then the bankers end up with all the assets. Because people take on more debt than they can repay, then the bankers repossess everything.
There you go. And
fractional reserve banking is a means of transferring real wealth to the financial elite over long periods of time.
That's why disengagement is so important. That's why there aren't really any functional alternative currencies that I know of working. There's been some attempts. I don't think they've been very well defined. But, you know, doing things with barter. That's why transition movement is so important. You can share
local
things without shelling
time
money.
Banks. There are many, many ways
yes.
to do this.
Yes, that's why transition U.S. is so important. That's what I'm trying to do is like point everybody to where they need to go.
Yes, I support them as well for very much the same reasons. What they're suggesting is very important. You have to relocalize. You have to develop local resilience and self-sufficiency if you possibly can.
Okay, we have another question. This is from a guy named Sherman Lee here in California. He says, I work at a public library here in the Central Valley of California. For many in the public, we are their only source of Internet access and access to books. Good point. When collapse picks up steam and connection with the Internet becomes spotty at best or non-existent at worst, and those needing information will have to rely upon books or knowledgeable friends. If the county budget really gets grim, it would be no surprise if the library closes for an extended period. Mike, what books would you recommend people to buy before time runs out? Great questions. Nicole, what would you recommend? The guy asked $500 worth of books. What books would you buy?
I would start it depends who you are, what level of sophistication, but I would start with A Short History of Financial Euphoria by J.K. Galbraith. It's really short, it's really readable, and it really communicates the essence of what financial bubbles really are. I would also read Financial Armageddon by Michael Pansner. I think that's an extremely good book. I would read Conquer the Crash by Bob Prechter. That's much more technical. So if you're Joe on the street, you might have a hard time with that. But I really enjoy Bob Prechter's work. It's extremely to the point. It's very well done, especially his work on socionomics, but that's mostly not in that particular book.
Okay, we got
those I would really start with. The Upside of Down by Thomas Homer Dixon is another great favorite of mine. There are quite a few of them that I recommend on the left-hand sidebar of the Automatic Earth.
Okay. I would we want to move through these questions. We've only got about 6 minutes left. I would buy books on mechanics, farming, first aid, herbal medicine, animal husbandry, sewing, shoemaking. Those are the kind of books I'd buy. Okay, here's a question from a listener. Please say hello to all those collapse netters from Game Dog. Oh, he's a regular on our site. It's easy to get overwhelmed by the headlines. Blah, blah, blah. Thanks for the plug for Collapse Net. I'd like to thank you and Nicole for what you're doing. Mike, who switched me on to Peakwell years ago, and Nicole for her recent world tour presentation. I've ordered DVDs to send out to my family, and you'll get a chance to plug all that, please, Nicole. My last attempt to wake them up and clear my conscience. It's people like you who maintain my faith. Okay, the question is concerning the magnitude of deflation upon us globally and some elements of the financial blogosphere proclaiming inflation or hype. I think we pretty much covered this within 2 to 6 months. Can you give some idea of the magnitude of the deflation we would face? Again, you know, I'm stuck with the like serious and like beyond your wildest imagination. I don't know. Nicole, what do you got?
I would certainly say considerably worse than the Great Depression.
Yes.
Because if you look at the scale of the bubble, it is simply larger than any bubble that's ever existed in human history. The second largest one was the South Sea Bubble in the 1720s. The effect of that was decades of upheaval culminating in a series of revolutions, including the American and the French. So I think we're probably looking at something comparable. This is why I call my presentation A Century of Challenges. I think it will be a very long period of upheaval. I think this initial depression is the opening phase of that, and we may see a long depression, then we may see hyperinflation and conflict, but I think we're going to have a huge amount of instability for decades as a result of this.
And
so
I want to be
depression is phase one.
And I want to be clear that it's an article of faith for us that due to peak oil, there will be no recovery to anything like we knew before.
I don't think business as usual, as we perceive it to be usual, is ever coming back.
The fossil fuel
inheritance is a once in a planet's lifetime deal.
Okay, got one more question. My name is Jim Sullins. This is Jim Sullins, who co-wrote a song called Back Road with me for New White Trash. He's an old band member. He's a member of Collapse Net. He writes, home ownership kind of has the feel of being permanently in one place, so people settle in, nesting themselves, tighter than a screw in drywall. No one knows this better than the government, who has made it easy to catch, quote, the dream. Local and state governments need the income from taxes to operate. I believe they could use this to take the homeowner hostage in his home simply by raising tax rates and local government-owned utility rates. Is this possible? Is it rational to have one's assets in home ownership? I think that's a great question.
Absolutely, it is. I tell most people that renting is by far the better option.
Yes.
Because you get out of debt. If you sell a property that you have equity in, you get out of debt and you have cash on hand, which are points one and two of the things that people need to be thinking of doing. And you have the mobility, you have the flexibility to go away from upheaval, to go to where the jobs are. Paying someone rent is paying them a fee to take the property price risk for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a tremendous bet in a real estate collapse, and that's absolutely what we're facing. Taxes are going to go up. As government tax revenues fall, they are going to tighten the screws on anyone who appears to have anything that's worth something, very much including property owners.
Let's see if we can get a couple more questions in for the incredible Nicole Foss. Poor Nicole. Yes, I know. I don't go near a microphone unless I have a big cup of tea sitting right here, a cup of hot tea. Okay,
sorry,
here's
about that.
You all right?
I am, yes.
Okay. Happens to me, too. I'm a CollapseNet member. Thank you. I would like to ask the fabulous Nicole Foss the following question. I recently heard James Rickards, I don't know who that is, speak. He said that Bernanke has a trump card up his sleeve and that the U.S. has 8,000 tons of gold, which it will ultimately use to create the inflation he, Bernanke, wants, thus inflating away or significantly mitigating the debt. I'm scratching my head at this. That makes no sense to me. Nicole, what do you got?
I don't think it makes any sense to me either.
Okay.
I really don't. And I don't see him being able to inflate away this debt. I think most developed countries, if not all of them, are so far past the point of no return in terms of ever being able to repay this debt. It's just ridiculous. They're so vulnerable to even the slightest rise in interest rates, and that is coming. It's going to be an enormous risk premium the bond market is going to place on sovereign debt. And I think we're going to see sovereign debt defaults all over the place. Any responses that central authorities make are going to be too little, too late. They react. They are not proactive. They react to circumstances that come along, but deflation unfolds too quickly. They're going to be overtaken by events. No matter what they do.
And they usually make things worse. One last question.
They do, yes.
One last question. I think we're going to make it. We got 1 minute left. I just got the sign. Okay, here we go. What are your thoughts on investing on precious metal mining stocks? Oh, my God.
I wouldn't touch any stock.
I wouldn't touch any stock with a 10-foot pole.
I really wouldn't. It doesn't matter what it is that the stock is in. When you have a market collapse, people will throw the baby out with the bathwater. Just as the most ridiculous dross got a free ride to the top on the way up.
Right.
Things that should have survived will get washed out on the way down. I really would not be invested in stocks. I wouldn't carry paper gold and things either for very much the same kind of reason. It's a Ponzi scheme. You know, if you are going to have precious metals, it has to be physical precious metals or it doesn't count.
Nicole Foss, please tell all of our listeners tonight and thank everybody. We had such enthusiasm tonight, big numbers tonight. How can people find out more about what you do and learn from you? Tell them.
Well, we have a DVD out at the moment, or a streaming presentation, which is the slightly cheaper version, and they're both exactly the same content. We also have on the right-hand sidebar our primers list, And the top, I believe the top or the second entry on that is our updated primer guide, which is the look at all the essays written on the theoretical background to what we're facing. All of that is free. So it depends what people are looking for. If they would like an actual audiovisual presentation, that's available clearly on our front page. If they would rather read the information in essay form on a wide range of topics, that's available on the right-hand sidebar further down.
That's at automaticearth.blogspot.com. Did I get that right?
It
Nicole Foss, I want to thank you so much. And what's very clear to me is that we need more conversations and dialogue like this so that so many people can get the feedback from like you and me together and maybe Chris Martinson. I don't know how we got to do this, but I just really have a sense that we did a lot of people a lot of good tonight. I want to thank you so much for being my guest.
You're very welcome. I'm everybody, very happy to have been here.
Everybody, check out Nicole Foss. Listen to what she has to say. We have Chris Martinson coming up next year, and we'll be back next week with Trapper Tom Brown on the Lifeboat Hour.